Our subject for today is competition. What's considered fair competition, and when is it considered that we overstepped our bounds? And that's called Oni Hamahapech Becharora. And this is a sugya that appears in Masechta Kiddushin. And Be'ezra Hashem, we'll try to go through this sugya. It's in the third parak of Kiddushin on Daf Nun Test. There's also a sugya in Babas on Daf Nun Dalet Amid Beis. And you'll see those two sugyas here on the pages. The halacha you'll see mostly on pages 3 and 4. And some important comments of the Pisrei, or the Pisrei Tshuva. So let's just say by general introduction that we live in a world with finite resources, meaning you have two people that want to purchase the same item and they're vying for the rights to purchase the item. And the question is, let's say both want to buy a house or a car, both are looking for a job, there's only one job.
We can't hear, Rob, we can't hear.
Oh, you don't hear me? Okay.
Can you turn off the sound?
I mean, in this situation, is there any onus, like, is this assuming that everybody knows what's happening? When the Shani comes, this is assuming the Shani knows there's a Rishon.
Well, again, that's what the Gemara tells about Rav Gidl, that,
does the Meicher, who knows about both guys for sure,
right,
does he have a responsibility to say, I started with number one, I should continue negotiating with number one?
Or at least give number one the chance, at least say to the Rishon that someone else is offering the full price. Right. If you cannot pay the full price, then I'm going with the Shani. Like, does the Meicher have any responsibility here?
I understand your question, Ira, but I'm not yet ready for that. Meaning, what I'm trying to build up is that which I know, and then slowly but surely add pieces of information. Let me just summarize what I do know. What I do know, based on the Gemara Bav Metzia, is that Oni Hamahapech B'Charora is a responsibility that's imposed on the Gavra, on the head of the Shani. That's what I do know. To what extent is the Mocher himself responsible vis-a-vis the first possible buyer, meaning the Rishon? We don't know anything about that yet, because that's not addressed in that sugya in Masechta Kiddushin. Wait a minute, let me just give you the overview of what I know so far, Rabbi Osai. What I know is that Rabbi Abba went ahead and undermined Rabbi Gidl in the story in the Gemara. And he was accused by Rabbi Yitzhak Nafcha of being a Rasha. Why? Because of the mashal that he gave him of Oni Hamahapech B'Charora. The Gemara establishes that everybody agrees that Rabbi Abba would have been a Rasha, except for the fact that he didn't know that Rav Gidl was in the process of negotiating over the house. I was asking, well, what would be in terms of the moral responsibility on the shoulders of the Mocher to notify Rabbi Abba that, you know, Rav Gidl is offering me a price and I was about to finalize with him? Excellent question. What I do know is that insofar, and let me add another question, which was the question that I was hinting at before, and that is, if the Gemara is talking about Oni Hamahapech B'Charora to impose a moral obligation on the Shani who's a potential buyer, is there such a thing as Oni Hamahapech B'Charora to impose a moral obligation on a seller who wants to beat out another seller for that same client? And that's a question that we have to answer. What I do know is that there's a major conflict here about how to understand Oni Hamahapech B'Charora. One way is to say that there's a certain element of rishus here on the part of the Shani, simply because the Rishon has made certain advances and certain, he has, as we said before, he has invested certain energies and he has made a certain amount of progress in which he's closing the gap by offering offer of price to pay. But again, it still is under the market value. In other words, I'm assuming that there is a market value at the full price, at the million. In fact, that's exactly what happened. The second guy offered him $1 million, which was exactly what the seller was asking. That was the asking price. That's a fair price. Here, we have two schools of thought. One school of thought says there's already a moral obligation imposed upon the Sheni to respect the first guy, only if he knows about it. The second approach is to say, no, there's no moral obligation. I'm the representative now, the Sheni. I have to worry about myself. Chayecha Kodman. I see a good deal, a good investment. There's a fair price being offered. I want to pay that fair price. And that's the pshat of Rabbeinu Tam. And Rabbeinu Tam says that the scale is tipped in favor of the Sheni, meaning we're going to put arguments into the mouth of the Sheni, and only if the Rishon could prove to the Sheni, hey buddy, what's your problem? You're not losing a thing over here. There's another house for sale down the block. Go buy that house. Why are you chaffering with me? And if we're already trying to put arguments into the mouth of the Rishon in order to establish his moral rights, and the Oni HaMahapach B'Charora, the obligations incumbent upon this on the second buyer, then let's go with the Raman, the Prisha. And they're going to say that the Sheni has a right to say to the Rishon, Misamcha, who says that your deal would have come through? There's no guarantee. There was still a considerable gap. No one could know that at the end of the day the deal would be signed and sealed. On the other hand, it's not just missing the formal act of a kinyan, it's missing an agreement on the sale, or as the preacher says, an agreement on the terms of payment. That seems to be a fundamental machlokas. Therefore, I want to pick up the next nafkemina, and that's going to be the case of hefker. If it's hefker, no one owns it, Reuven has made an effort to try to make a kinyan on it. Does Shimon have a right to say, well, Chayecha Kodman, I come first. I have to worry about myself. I don't have to worry about you. According to Rashi, one could ostensibly argue that if Reuven has already indicated that he wants to make a kinyan, he's implemented all the efforts that he has to be kona this hefker, then there's already a moral responsibility, because again, we're tipping the scale in favor of the Rishon, for the Sheni to respect live and let live. And that's called Yored L'chai Chavercha. But if on the other hand, according to Rabbeinu Tam, we have an argument tipping the scale in favor of the Sheni, that he has a right to put himself at the epicenter of the universe, Ella what? The Rishon could counter and say to him, go down the block and buy it. In the case of Hefker, you don't have a right to say so. So let me share with you what I do know. Again, there are a lot of questions here that I don't know. And when we're trying to define the halacha of fair competition, it's very complex. I want to quote to you a small piece of a long tshuva from the Avnei Nezer. And this I didn't find here in the pages that I gave you. So listen, if you can, to Torah Shebal Peh. Kol zman she'eino rotze l'machro lo, ein din ani amahapich b'charor. The Avnei Nezer says up front that as long as the mocher has not agreed, or shall we say, has not decided to sell the item, there's no ani amahapich b'charor. Im kein li olam yachal hamocher lachzor me'arishon v'limkar liacher. Okay, then now we get back. We're getting a little bit closer, Ira, to your question, in which the Avnei Nezer says the mocher can decide that, you know what, I got a better offer. I'm not going to sell it to the Rishon. V'ha'acher, and so too the Sheni mutal liknos mimenu. Why? Since the mocher really wants to find a different buyer, he never really had a full gemiras das and a decision to sell it to the Rishon. Shuv ein isu liacher. The ein isu rakim ha'acher hischilo ha'mocher. If they got to the point where the mocher has agreed to sell it to the Rishon. I'm not saying that there are any gevaldige chidushim here in the Avnei Nezer, but certainly he belongs to the camp of Rabbeinu Tam and the Ramah and the Prisha. He's saying again that let's analyze the mindset of the Bocher. The prohibition of Ani Amahapich Bicharara would only apply when the sale was agreed upon by the Mocher. As long as the Mocher hasn't made that agreement, which again he's looking for another possible buyer at a better price, then the Lokeach Sheni now becomes free of any moral responsibility vis-a-vis the Rishon.
Well,
yeah.
Just I've noticed that you haven't put in an idea that where the second guy is offering more than the asking price. Is that on purpose?
Yes, that's already another machlokas, you know. Okay.
Because would that knock off Rabbeinu Tam's idea? Because
well, not really. Again, you know, if you go with the Avnei Nezer, there's an endless, you know, infinite amount of possibilities that someone will jack up the price, but the final clincher that sets Ani Amapik B'charori into motion in the language of the Avnei Nezer is Kisherotzel Mochro. He's not interested in finding another buyer. The seller is absolutely happy with the agreement that he has with the first buyer. That's what I have here.
How do the others not Rashi Taich Ani Amapik B'charori? In other words, you look at it pashut, it means like the Ani is looking for food, and he's dealing with hefker. No, that's where, like the way Rashi learns it pashut.
Right. I think that Ani Amahapik Pacharo, the language of the Gemara, would sound like Rashi, that there's some sort of moral obligation because the Ani needs this charora. And if the Rishon needs to buy this thing, then he's like the Ani Amahapik Bacharora. But Rabbeinu Tam understands that Rav Yitzchak Nafcha was sort of exaggerating a little bit by saying Ani Amahapik Bacharora. But what he really meant to say was that, let's say, for example, this item that's being sold is a good investment, especially at the price that the Rishon is offering. In a certain sense, you, the Sheni, by undermining the Rishon, are causing the Rishon a loss, even in financial terms. Again, I'm not sure that I'm saying the right pshat, Rabbeinu Tam, but I think Rabbeinu Tam wants to give, you know, he's demanding that the Rishon have a very strong, powerful argument against the Sheni. And in order to indicate that, he's saying it's an Ani Amahapik B'Charora situation, meaning the Rishon, Rav Gidl, was about to sign a contract. Everything was set into motion. There were no issues that divided the Mocher and the Lokeach. That's called Ani Amahapik B'Charora, because at that point, if this is a good investment from the perspective of the Lokeach Rishon, then you are really undermining his situation. That's unfair competition. So what I'd like to do now is, again, because there's so much here on this sugya, is to try to at least present the following mikoros, which you have hopefully in front of you. Number one, we had the Gemara in Kiddushin. That we saw, the Gemara of Rav Gidl and Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha. Now, there was a tircha on the part of Rav Gidl to try to purchase this item, and there was a situation in which, let's say, they were very close to finalizing the agreement. Again, Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam, and so forth and so on. But according to Rabbeinu Tam, there was a possibility of purchasing that same item or something very similar in a different place. The Rasha here, according to Rabbeinu Tam, is the fact that he wants to get this one house. He's not willing to look for another house, and he's undermining the first person. Now, before we go on, I forgot to mention that there's a Pisrei Tshuva on page 3, and he writes that this Iser is an Iser Midivrei Kabbalah, meaning until this point, we didn't think that there was any source in the Torah or in Tanakh, for that matter, for the Iser of Ani Amahapik Pachara. It was a special Takonas Chachamim. But the Pisrei Tshuva, which I don't have right here in front of me this second, he says, no, it's an Iser Midirei Kabbalah. But let's get back on track if we can. By the way, I have no concept of what time it is. Oh boy, I just took a look. All right. I don't know how the time flew, but let's go on. We'll see what we can accomplish. Okay. We still haven't answered the following questions. Number one, what's the nafkamina la halacha by calling someone a rush? Is it just an Erev Yom Kippur halacha that he has to do tshuva? Number two, we don't know whether or not, as a result of the fact that he's a Russia, he would have to return the object, or at least maybe make a sale to the Rishon at the price that the Rishon was willing to pay. Number three, we don't know whether there's any Iser of Ani Amapach Pacharo vis-a-vis the first Mocher, if a second Mocher wants to undermine the first Mocher. And we have the machlokas now in Kiddushin between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. And then Afkamina is going to be the case of a Metzia or Hefker. Rashi would insist that even in the case of Hefker, there's Ani Amahapach Pacharora. Rabbeinu Tam would say, no, the Shady has a right to say, where are you sending me? Where am I going to find another Hefker? There's only one item that's Hefker. That's all in Masechta Kiddushin on Daf Nun Tes. Now, we take a look in Baba Basra. And that's on the bottom of your page one. This is on Daf Nun Dalet Amud Beis. Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel that Nichsei Goy Harehem Kemidbar. Meaning, Midbar is a symbol of Hefker. And therefore, Im Kibol HaGoy Kesef Ma Yisrael, if the Jew paid money for the land, for the real estate of a guy, v'lo hichzik ba adayin Yisrael, there wasn't yet a kinyan chazok on the part of the buyer, then if someone else, another Jew, comes along and he makes a chazoka on that karka, then he's zoch in the karka. And if you look in the Rashbam, which you'll see on the left side, the Rashbam insists that Yesh Mefarshim, there are those who say that although technically the Sheni has made a kinyan on the karka because the first Jew did not make a kinyan chazok on the karka, but nevertheless he has to return that karka to Lokeach Rishon, arguing that it's no worse than Ani Amahapich B'Charora. On the contrary, it's much worse than Ani Amahapich B'Charora. Because here even Rabbeinu Tam would agree that it's Ani Amahapich B'Charora. After all, the Rishon paid money to the guy. The only thing is, he didn't make the formal kinyan of Chazaka. Again, this goes into issues about how you kona karka from a guy, but that's not for us now. Suffice it to say, he needs a Kenyan chazok. And the Rashbam disagrees. Says the Rashbam, Nira B'enai, Dahai, that this second Jew who grabbed the karka, made a Kenyan on it, Rasha Mikri, Delogara mi Ani Amahach B'Charora. However, he doesn't have to return the karka. So it comes out like this. The logic of Ani Amahapach B'Charora in the case where the Jew paid the guy the full price and the second guy comes and makes a chazok and he's koneh the karka undermining the first guy, that logic that it's Ani Amahapach B'Charora is unquestionable. It's a kal v'chomer ben benoshel kal v'chomer. But the machlokas here between the Yesh Mefarshim and the Rashbam himself is how far does the halacha go? Does Allah go as far as to say that, okay, Ani Amahapach B'Charora, the guy undermines the first, and therefore he's a Rasha, period. That's the end of story. So says Rashbam. The Yesh Mefarshim say no, that he, the Shady, has to return the karka to the Lokeach Rishon because of the law of Ani Amahapach B'Charora. And if you look at Tosfos there, on the right side of your page, Dibar Maschil, Okay, I don't see it right now. Anyway, okay, but well, I'll just say the Tosis Balpeh. Tosis says that according to Rabbeinu Tam, Afilu Rasha, he says, Kevan Shelo Yimtza B'Makom Acher, he says that certainly in this case, the Mocher has gone so far as to pay the, I'm sorry, the Lokech Rishon has to pay the price. Does the Lokech Rishon therefore have a right to say the Lokech Sheni, pack your bags and go find a karka to buy elsewhere? According to Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, according to Rashi and the Rashbam, there never was an issue. This is an Ani Amahapith B'Charora situation. And therefore, at the very least, you have to call him a Rasha for absconding with the karka and ripping it out, so to speak, of the hands of the Rishon. But according to Rabbeinu Tam, there might even be a possibility that he's not called a Rasha. And Tosis vacillates about this point, because he says that if the Lokeach Rishon could say to the Lokeach Sheni, why not get the karka from somebody else? That's called Ani Amahapich B'Charora and Nikra Rasha, according to Rabbeinu Tam. But what happens in a case where he cannot find such a piece of karka? We spoke about this in terms of Hefker, but now we're talking about a case where he's actually paying the guy for the karka. And you get the impression, and again this is very tenuous, but I think the pshat is, according to Tosfos, that in those days it wasn't so common, it wasn't so easy to just snap your fingers and find a piece of karka that the guy is willing to sell. And therefore the Sheni has a right to say, well, the Risha, there's no gzela here, you didn't make a kinyan, we'll give you your money back, but I have a right to grab and seize this unique opportunity and buy the karka. So that even though according to Rashi and the Rashbam, it's clear cut that this is a rishus, according to Rabbeinu Tam, it seems to be an open-ended question. Now, in addition to this, we have another sugya of Ani Amahapich B'Charora, and that's another Gemara in Bava Basra on the top of your page 2, and that's Chaf Aleph Amid Beis. This is the famous sugya of Yored Lu'umnaso Shel Chavero, which means that you were vying for a job, and I decided that I'm going to apply for the job, and I'm going to get the job before you. So Tosis asks, why should Yored Umnaso Shel Chavero be a problem according to the sheet of Rabbeinu Tam? What are you going to tell me? This is like Ani Amahapich B'Charora. This is a case of Hefker. Why is this a case of Hefker? Because this is the one job that's being offered. You know, I read all the ads, looking for a job. And this was the only one that was available. So I, meaning the Sheni, I have to worry about myself according to Rabbeinu Tam. I'm not a Rasha. I know that I won't have an opportunity coming this way for who knows how long. And Tosu says that according to Shita says, Tekomar Asam Archikim and Adag Kimole Rit Sadag Afalpi Shehu Shel Hefker. According to Rabbeinu Tam, I don't understand. We're talking about a case where the fisherman sets out his nets in order to catch the fish. And the Gemara in Baba Basra about Yored Lumnosa Shchaver says that another fisherman is not allowed to catch those fish. He has to be marchik his nets, kimole ritza sadag, from the nets of the first fisherman who laid out his traps, his nets. Well, according to Rabbeinu Tam, why should that be a problem? Where's the rishus over here? He, the second fisherman, has a right to say, I'm going to get these fish because they're hefker. But Rabbeinu Tam, on the other hand, brings a raya to his shita from a Mishnah in Bav Metzia. Ra'as ha-metzia v'nafalo aleha, he sees a metzia and he falls on the metzia. He hasn't yet made a kinyan on the metzia. Piresh talis aleha, he puts his talis over the object. Ba'achar v'tnotla, someone else comes along and grabs the object. Harei hi shalo. Meaning that there's no iser of why not? The first one made an effort, indicated and demonstrated that he wants to be koned in this object. Now the second guy takes it away from him. The answer is, says Rabbeinu Tam, it's hefker. Or for example, the Mishnah says, Misha Likei Miktas Peah. A person started it, already started collecting Peah. And then Pirish Taliso. And then he threw his talis on the rest of the Peah. Is Mavir no Samimena. Which means that someone else is allowed to come along, another ani, and take away the peah. Says Rabbeinu Tam, you see clearly that in the case of hefker, or in peah, which is hefker, matnas aniyim, there's no iser of ani hamahapif b'charora. But once again, I think that Rashi would defend himself, and he might say that it says harei shalo, which means that we don't impose sanctions on a person who violated the takana of ani hamahapif b'charora. And we saw already that the Rashbam in Baba Basra has insisted that if somebody goes ahead and makes the Kenyan Chazok on the Karka of the guy, then he doesn't have to forfeit. He doesn't have to forfeit the Karka, even though he violated the Isur of Oni Mahapit Bacharora. So, according to Rashi, the Mishnah Bab Metzia or the Mishnah Peah is not addressing the question of morality and whether he's allowed to do is this unfair practice or not. The Mishnayos over there just want to address the issue of kinyan. Who has a formal kinyan on it? And the answer is that, you know, Piresh Taliso Aleh, that's not a formal kinyan. Okay, let me just take another few minutes of your time. If you have to go, you have to go. And I want to quote the Shulchan Aruch. How do we paskin regarding Ani Amahapech Becharor? So this you'll see on page 3 in Simon Reish Lamed Zayin in Choshen Mishpat. And the Shulchan Aruch quotes two deos regarding Ani Amahapech Becharora, whether it applies even in the case of Hefker, even in the case of Metzia. There's another case here called a Matana, which basically we have to understand, but it's like similar to Hefker and Metzia. If you take a look in the Shulchan Aruch and Sif Beis, you get the impression that he passes like Rabbeinu Tam, that the final law is that there's no Iser of Ani Amahapit B'Charora in the case of Hefker. Now the one who really studies this in depth, which you'll see at the end of this collection of Maror Mekomos, is a Dayan here in Yerushalayim by the name of Rabbi Yitzchak Oshinsky, and he writes a book called Oros Mishpat. And he claims that the Ramah for sure was Machriya Halacha like Rabbeinu Tam, but yet the Igros Moshe is worried about Rashi Shita. And the Igros Moshe, which you'll see on page 13, he says, Roy Liyurei Shamayim Lahachmir B'machlokes Zu Kidas Rashi. So a person has Yirei Shamayim, he doesn't want to be called a Rasha, then he should be careful and not violate Rashi's broader, all-inclusive definition of Ani Mahapek B'Charora as far as the Metzia is concerned. However, Abosai, and with this I want to leave you food for thought, what exactly is a Metzia according to Rabbeinu Tam? And when Rabbeinu Tam says that once it's a Metzia, then the Sheni has rights to say, I want to chop this Metzia and I don't care about the Rishon. What happens if there's a very unusual price that's being offered on the market? There's a slash price one time sale. According to Rabbeinu Tam, there's no din of Ani Amahapek B'Charora in a case of Hefker Metzia. Do I have a right here to say that even though it's not Hefker, but it's a steal? It's almost like Hefker, because I'm going to be saving whatever, let's exaggerate and say, I'm going to be saving 50% of the market value. Here in Israel, we have this very often in electrical stores and also in optician, you know, eyeglasses, you know, they have, I don't know if you heard of Halper, you know, all of a sudden, slash price. They're selling everything for half price. So what are you going to tell me? There's one last pair of glasses that's for me. And he was looking for it, and he was trying to purchase it, and he put down a bid for it. I'm not going to be able to buy it. For me, that's a mitzvah. For the Shani, he has no other way, if he loses this, of getting at it. You know, they have this in sales of, what should we call it, of what do they call it, airplane tickets. You know, the airline says, like, it's about to fly, and they have one last ticket to sell. You know, Dan's Deals. You know, so at the last minute, you can sign up at a half price for a ticket. And I'm trying to do it online. You know, I filled out everything. You got my credit card and everything else. And this guy comes along, knowing full well, if he does, and he decides to undermine me. He's faster at the computer than I am. So on the one hand, this is not technically hefker. We're talking about a sale, and Rabbi Nitam agrees in the case of a sale that it's unfair competition for the second buyer to undermine the first buyer. But on the other hand, it's such a darn cheap price that it's basically like a mitzia. That's what we call it in Yiddish. It's a mitzia, right? So if you take a look at the Ramah on page 3, he says that I paskin like Rabbi Nitam. Ki im kone dover echad uba chavero v'yachol l'knoso bizol. If the second guy comes along and he can purchase this at a very cheap price, v'eino motzi l'knoso b'mokom acher, he can't find it at that price anywhere else. Havi le'kamo mitzia, it has the same status of mitzia v'yachol l'knoso. If the first guy did not make a kinyan, the second one is allowed to abscond because there's nowhere else that he can get it at such a cheap price. Again, I don't know. How much of a price is he saving that you can call it a mitzia? Maybe we should learn the halachas of honah, whether it's a shtus or more than a shtus. But if you take a look at the shach in Sifkat and Gimel, comments on this Ramah, that the Ramban in Baba Basra writes that afil bepachos midmei shovi achefetz, even if the going price is way under the market price, and the Shani therefore looks for this golden opportunity to beat out the Rishon, gamke nikra Russia, he's still considered Russia. Why? Because the halach was established that there's something called mecher and there's something called mitzia. And if this is going up for sale, then Rabbi Nitam would agree that this is Ani Amahapit Pacharoro. The only exception to the rule is a mitzia or hefker. And again, as I mentioned to you before, the one who does all the research on this is the Oros Mishpat of Rabbi Yitzchak Ushinsky, which you'll find here on pages 6 and page 7. And that's a big thing. Okay, there, Rabosai, so how do we paskin on the question that we addressed before? At what point in time do we say that the Rishon was considered a Mehabech and the Shani therefore is not allowed to undermine him? So the Ramah here says, in the name of the Mordechai, Din Ani HaMehabech B'chara Lo Nemar Elke Shekvar Pasku HaMocher Valokech HaRishon HaDomim Shebeinehem V'ein HaMechusarim Elekinyan. This was the Ramah that we indicated before. Aval im chusarin adayin hapsika, if they haven't come to some agreement on the price, hamocher rotzer bekach, hakone rotzer yoser bezol, the seller is not willing to match the price, the demanding price of the seller, mutoli acher leknoso. And if you take a look at the Sma, he says that im ye'osar l'sheni l'sasik b'schora, if you're going to prohibit the Shani from entering into negotiations even before the Rishon has come to some agreement, yafsid amocher. In effect, you're setting up a takana, which is very nice to protect the Rishon, the mocher, but what the lokeach? But what about the mocher? Are we saying that the mocher miyad sheyovo echad liknos, as soon as the first guy comes along, the yisok olav pachos bishovyo, and he presents a bid which is under the asking price, yitztarcha mochel aseislo sherei ein acher eshoy l'knosa, you're basically in effect saying that the mocher will have to sell to the first potential buyer because the second buyer is not allowed to outbid the first buyer. Is therefore, says the Sma, asu takona l'mocher, we have to make a takona that also takes into account a fairness for the position of the seller, and therefore, rak me hapsika, Shebein amocha lekona nesar al acher. Only from the moment when there was a final agreement between the mocher on and the kona on the price, and again we added the pre-shel on the terms of payment, is then nesar al acher les asik veliknos osa schor. Then no one else is allowed to offer a better price because there's already been an agreement between the mocher and the lokeach, the first lokeach. Everything was set. The only thing that was missing was the maisa kinyan, the formal kinyan. Now we have a sefer from Rav Yaakov Bloy, who's a member of the Badatzia, the Eidei Charedus Yerushalayim. It's called Pischei Choshen, and he says b'davar shemechiro yodua, if there's a well-known price, oh shenisratzu shneim ligmar amekach b'mechir sheskivu beinem. Is yesh din mahapich b'charora? He says that if the price is known, it's well known. There's no room really for much negotiations. That's what you sell it for. No one's going to undercharge or overcharge because it's a well known price. Or alternatively, the mocher and the lokeach have agreed to agree, meaning they haven't yet come to a final price, but they have made an agreement that will work this out. That's enough to engender and activate the Mahapich Becharora. And he wants to extend this kind of a svar to Schirus. He says, B'der klal nohug lahasnos od kamatnoim milvad pisuk nomim. In an employment relationship, usually there are other factors that come to play that have to be, you know, contractually agreed to, not just the price, not just the wages. Is lachen yitochin shegam liachar pisuk adomim kol shel nishtavu adayim b'sharat noim. Even though the potential employee is in agreement to accept a certain salary, a certain wage, but nevertheless there are other conditions and clauses that haven't yet been agreed upon, is harei zekelo pasku, it's as if they did not come yet to a final agreement, and there's no ani hamahapech b'charora, someone else could come along and offer his position as a potential employee and take the job away from the first one. Now the Pischei Tshuva addresses the following question: Kasher Kona Sheni Lo Yoda Shehoya Lefanav Kona Acher. If the second buyer was unaware of the fact that there was a first buyer, is the Pischei Tshuva quotes the Shut Chemdas Shlomo. She'im alokeach ha'sheni lo yoda mikavanas harishon ein olav din rasha klal. And that's exactly as we saw in the sugya bav mitzia, what Rabbi Abba told Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha, that I didn't know anything about it. Now the Gemara goes on to say that Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha was going to be mechayev Rabbi Abba to pay Rav Gidol, even though Rabbi Abba was unaware of the fact that Rav Gidol was Mahapich B'charora. And the Chemdas Shlomo claims that that's only a Midas Chassidus Bilvad, that really Mikra did, insofar as the fact that the Sheni, Rabbi Abba, was not aware of the fact that the Rishon Rav Gidol was trying to buy this piece of land. He, that means Rabbi Abba the Sheni, is not in any way a Rasha, and to try to impose upon him some obligation of paying Rav Gidol, that's certainly not al pidin. That's only mividas chasidus. But Moshe Feinstein in the Igros Moshe, he quotes this tshuva of the Chemda Shlomo, and he quotes proofs that the Shady is called a Rasha, even though he was unaware of the fact that there was a Kona Rishon. Again, a Rasha in potential, I guess you'd say. And when Rabbi Abba was forced to pay Rav Gidol, that was Me'ikar Adin. It wasn't just Midas Chasidus. So that machlokas between the Chemda Shlomo and Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, the Tshuva, has to be taken under advisement. It needs a lot of study. And it's a very important piece because the Sheni is very often unaware of the Rishon. Does the halacha of Ani HaMahapach B'charora apply when the Sheni is unaware of the Rishon? Midas Chasidus is one thing, but to say the Mikra Adin, that's a whole nother story. Now, in a situation where, and this is the main question, there is an Ani Amahapi Charora violation, and the Sheni went ahead and he purchased this item even though the Rishon had already had a Psikas Domim, and even if the Sheni was aware of this fact, the question is, does the Sheni now have to return this object to the Rishon? Obviously, he'll be paid for that, but does he have to forfeit the object? And the Ramban and the Ritva bring, in the name of Rabbeinu Tam, Shekol Mokom, any time in the din of Oni Ba'amakos Shenikra Rosha, Bezdin Mechayven Oso Lahachzir. So that there's a quote here in the name of Rabbeinu Tam that Oni Amapachu Pacharora Nikorosha means that he has to pay up. It's not just an Erev Yom Kippur Alocha. It's not just a question of requiring Kapor and Tshuva, but he has to actually return the item. But the Ramban and the Ritva both disagree with Rabbeinu Tam on this issue. And in their opinion, it's only a din of Rosha. It's an immoral, unfair business competition and business practice. But nevertheless, what's done is done. Erev Yom Kippur, he has to ask Mechilah and this, but he doesn't have to return the object. And it seems from the Pischei Tshuva and Sifkat and Beis here, Reish Lamed Zayin, that we paskin like Ramban and the Ritva. And this too you'll see in the Sefer Oros Mishpat. Now, what if the Mahapik Pacharor, the Rishon, is an Oshir? He's a wealthy guy. And if he loses this deal, then he has enough money to support his family. He's losing the deal is not a critical factor that could undermine his financial situation. So the Ramah says in the name of the Ran that Eina Sheni Nikar Rosha, that there has to be some indication that the Rishon really desperately needs this sale within the constellation and the framework of his financial status, that purchase is critical for him. And this again would, in my humble opinion, be totally in the machlokas between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. Rashi might say, well, okay, so what is an usher? He's still mahapech. He has a right to try to find in the shuk a business investment, a good investment. And after much, tircha and negotiation, he finally found one. So what if he's an usher? There are other details that have to be studied here. For example, Bali Yidei HaMahapich HaRishon Li'achas Shekvar Kona Sheni HaSachefetz. What happens if after the Sheni already went ahead and purchased the object, opportunity now to buy the same object or a similar object? Do we say that since at the moment that the Sheni purchased he was in violation of Ani Amapik Charo, therefore he's Chayav Bahasir Sachefetz according to the Shita of Rabbeinu Tam? Do we say no? Now the situation has changed and the Rishon has an opportunity to buy elsewhere. He can't claim, well, I have exclusive rights to buy this house when he could buy another house. Another issue that comes up is what happens if the Sheni, in order to observe and respect the halach of Ani Amahapik Charora, he withdraws his bid because he's a good guy, and now a third person comes along and buys the house. So he undermines the Rishon. Can the din of Ani Amahapik Charora apply vis-a-vis the Adam HaShlishi? Maybe it's only with regard to the Sheni, but not with regard to the Shlishi. Then we have another question. What about Ani Amahapik Charora, which is not financial at all, but it deals with the Dvar Mitzvah? Do we also say that since there's only one Mitzvah to be had, and the Rishon went ahead and he made all the efforts to, and he implemented all, input all the efforts to be zoch in that mitzvah, that no one else could take it away from him? Or is this only a din in finances? Now, what happens if, as a result of forcing the Sheni to return the item to the Rishon because of Ani Amahapech, the Sheni takes a hefsed mama? He's going to take a loss of funds. Why? Because let's say he's going to cancel the agreement. He may have to pay certain fees. And all this he's doing in order to give the Rishon the opportunity to make the purchase. Does he, the Sheni, have to suffer financial losses in order to observe the halacha of Ani HaMahapech Becharora? And the Sma writes that Machrizen al Rosha Bebeis HaKnesses Sha'asa Maisa Rosha. The Sma sees in this halacha of Nikar Rosha a very harsh and very strong law, which means that we can publicly mention and publicize this person as a Rosha, that he did such a thing. The Pesachei Tshuva quotes again the Chem Desh Shlomo, as we mentioned before, that the reason for this hachraza, this public declaration, is in order to humiliate the person who undermines the first guy. And not only that, the Chem Desh Shlomo wants to, and this is a pretty radical breakthrough, he wants to suggest that Efshar, it's possible, Sha'af Yesh Bidei Bezdin, La'onsho B'derech Knas, they can impose sanctions and penalties on the Sheni for undermining the Rishon, and that will deter him from repeating his crime. And again, getting back to the Orchos Mishpat that we mentioned before, he writes that Nifsal li Eidus l'Shvur, that when the Gemara calls the violator, the Sheni, a Rasha, because he undermined the Rishon, and he was undermining an Ani HaMahapech Becharora, a Rasha, we call him a Rasha, that has tremendous tremendous repercussions. He's Pasul Yedus, he's Pasul Lishru, he's a Rasha Mamish. Now, in a Sefer called Yachel Yisrael, he writes that there's a Diyun if this Rasha has a Chiv Tashlumin, even according to the Ramban and the Ritva, who say that he doesn't have to return the object, but maybe he has to pay something to the Rishon because he violated Ani HaMahapech Becharora on a Din Shamayim level in order to pater himself up from any moral offense here. He's a Rosh at this point. Does he have to pay some sort of compensation to the Rishon, even if he doesn't have to give him back the house and undermine the sale, negate the sale? And another question that he addresses is what happens if instead of the Sheni buying the house himself, he sends an agent to buy the house. Does that agent now, as the shliach of the Sheni, take upon himself all the Isurim of Ani HaMahapech Becharora? And if he implements the shlichus, ain't shlichus varvera, he, the shliach, becomes a rasha. Now, the question that we raised at the outset, is there a din of Ani HaMahapech Becharora regarding the mocher? Do we have to protect the mocher from another mocher who now wants to undermine the first mocher because he wants to get that client away from him? And again, we go back to the tshuva of the Avnei Nezer. He understood as a Dover Pashut that there was never a din of Ani HaMahapech Becharora regarding the mocher. The Gemara doesn't say a word about that. So Imu Rotza Limtzo Kona Acher, if he wants to decide, this is not exactly the case that I mentioned before, that another mocher is trying to seduce the potential buyer to buy from him, but rather this is a case where the mocher himself, insofar as he's entered into serious negotiations that are almost final with the mocher Rishon, is he allowed to sell to someone else instead of the first buyer? He finds a second buyer. And the Avnei Nezer claims that the seller has the object, he can sell to whoever he wants. He's not in any way constricted to sell it to the first potential buyer, even if there was an almost signature on the contract. And even if the mocher lo yimtza kona acher, even if the mocher, admittedly, if he doesn't find a different seller, he would be in agreement to sell it to the first guy. Nevertheless, if he finds a second buyer, he's allowed to sell it to the second buyer. So this is a tremendous kula of the Avnei Nezer. Now, what happens in the case of education? For example, if an educational institution is interested in hiring a teacher, the Shulchan Aruch says, La'alocha, we pass like Tosfos in the Sugi Kiddushin, Osur lemalamed lahaskir atzmo lebalabayis sheyesh lo malamed acher bebeiso. It's prohibited for a malamed to offer his services if the balabayis has already hired a malamed. In lo, with the exception to the case of sheyomar habalabayis ein ritzoni liakev hamalamed shali. If the boss, let's call him the principal, has already indicated that he wants to fire the first malamed, that's a different story. But as long as he's holding on and the employment relationship remains intact, as far as the first malamed is concerned, the second malamed is not allowed to present himself as a candidate to substitute for the first malamed. The first malamed has already been hired. There's already a contractual agreement of what we call schirus, and it's forbidden for the second guy to offer himself to replace the first guy. Aval im sochar balabais malamed echad yochal balabais acher liskar oso malamed atzmo. However, another balabais who sees that this young man, this educator, is very talented, he's allowed to try to wean him away from the first balabais. And the Sma explains, Be'azboras halimud v'iyuno ein hamalamdim shovim v'havile kedover shein of motzui. In other words, the Sma wants to suggest that it's very hard to find a great malamed who's an expert and he knows how to explain the material to this Talmidim in a perfect way. He knows how to understand the mindset of the Talmidim. There's a very rare malamed. And if you're going to force the second balabais and tie his hands, then you're basically forcing him to give up on a mitzia. And we said that in the case of mitzia, Rabbeinu Tam says there's no iser of ani hamahapech becharor. Again, we saw that Rabbi Moshe Feinstein says we, as a Yerushalayim, should be machmir for Rashi. But at least according to the strict letter of the law, and we indicated that the Shulchan Aruch Paskins accepts la halacha of the Rabbeinu Tam, therefore, in this case, the second balabais could hire the malamed himself. Now, I'm not sure how far the halacha is willing to go in this case. The way the Sma says it, he's a very unique and singular malamed, and therefore it would be like a mitzia that you can't find elsewhere. But once he's already been hired by the first balabais, you're literally stealing him away. You know, if the balabais, the first balabais, is in negotiations with this malamed, that's one thing. But if he's already hired him, he's in his employment, he's on his payroll, then it's very strange to assume that it's morally acceptable for another balabais to steal away this malamed from the first balabais. So I'm not sure how this works. I suspect that this is based on the fact that a poel yochel lachzor b'afilu b'emtzayom, that schirus is not like a regular kind of a kinyan, which is irreversible. Once the kinyan is done, then it's mamish gzela. Here, he hired the malamed, but the malamed could at any point quit and say, I'm out of here, and I have another job offer. The only issue is, can the second balabais actually wean him away? And it seems from the Shulchan Aruch and from the Sma that technically there is no problem in doing so, because it's like a mitzvah, which Rabbeinu Tam says is not ani hamahapech b'charora. Just to reiterate, because this is such an important point as we end this discussion for today, that the Avnei Nezer says that there's nothing unacceptable of ani hamahapech b'charora regarding the seller if the seller wants to seek other possible buyers. So that the issue here, according to the Avnei Nezer, of Ani Amahapik Pacharor is competition between two buyers, but not between a buyer and a seller. The seller owns his property and he reserves the right to sell to whomever he chooses. The potential buyer, however, must be wary to compete fairly. So again, the mocher is Yado al Elyona, and he can find another buyer as long as he hasn't finally made the kinyan with the first buyer. Now, if we go back to discuss that paradigm case that we spoke about, where the seller is offering the house at $1 million and somebody offers $950,000 and then they're about to sign the contract and somebody else comes along and undermines it. So the second competing buyer is subject to the restriction of Ani Amahapik Pacharora. Now, let's say that he finds out about the second guy finds out about the offer. He finds out about the offer of the Lokech Rishon. Based on this halacha of Ani Amahapik Pacharora, the Sheni should now withdraw his offer and allow for the Rishon's transaction to go through, to be completed. Now, supposing the buyer at this point wants to go along with the second buyer because the second buyer has offered him a better price, that would be unfair competition against the Lokech Rishon. So therefore, the best option, according to halacha, regarding the Lokech Sheni, is to wait on the side and see if the deal is closed with the Lokech Rishon. And this case is different than the case of the Avnei Nezer, who says that the mocher is always in the driver's seat and he can decide who he wants to sell it to. But here, once the takana, or call it an Iser B'divrei Kabbalah, of Ani Amahapik Pacharora has gone into effect, in other words, the deal with the first lokech is already almost signed and sealed, then it's wrong for the mocher to now decide to sell to someone else, meaning to this Sheni. I'm not sure again about a Shlishi, but as far as the Sheni is concerned, because the Sheni is not allowed to buy it, and basically if the mocher sells it to the Sheni, he's undermining the Rishon, and the Sheni is violating Ma'ani Ma'apach Pacharora. So that's, at the very least, it's a Lifnei Iver situation. Now, if you assume that the Lokech Sheni was unaware of the law of Ani Amahapik Pacharora, he was very influenced by the competitive free enterprise society that we live in. He went ahead and purchased the property, and now on the day after he signs the contract with the mocher, he gets a call, an angry call from the Lokech Rishon telling him that they were about to sign the contract on the very next day. Then the question is, what happens now? The Ritva writes, Miu Mashakosvu Zichron Levrochta Kol Hecha Shenikra Rasha Beznim Echaivin Osalachse Domim Hol Lesa Levadi De Rasha Mikri Aval Eno Chayv Beklum Lerishon. So again, in terms of Dini Mominos, the sale to the Sheni is valid, and the seller does not have to retract the purchase. True, the buyer is considered Rashi, violated Ani Amahapik Pacharora by knocking out the first one, but nevertheless, he doesn't have to pay anything, and Bezdin cannot force him to pay anything. According to Rabbeinu Tam, the word Rashi means that the sale is basically meant to be voided. You know, allow the first buyer to complete the purchase. That's called Hachzara. Because Rabbeinu Tam assumed that the term Rashi is a halachic status of some sort, and the buyer has to void the sale. The Ritva, on the other hand, and we saw the Ramban as well, says that the point is that although unfair competition is wrong and it's a rasha, but it's not gzela, and therefore there was no actual iser that was violated, and therefore there's no obligation to cancel the sale to allow the first buyer to purchase the property. Now again, in terms of Midas Chassidus, I think even the Ritva would agree that it would be the right thing for the Sheni to try to give back the karka in such a way that the Rishon could purchase it. Now, if on the other hand, let's say the Sheni was absolutely intentional, he was a Mezid Gomor, and his unfair competition wronged the Lokeach Rishon, if he wants to do tshuva, then for sure he should be eager to allow the Lokeach Rishon to purchase the land. Again, there'll have to be a new kinyan. But if, on the other hand, the Lokeach Sheni was not aware of the Lokeach Rishon, and he was a shogeg, there we had a discussion as to whether or not he is considered a quasi-Rasha, and he violated, unbeknown to himself, he had violated the Iser of Ani Amahapich B'Charara without knowing so. He didn't know about the first buyer. So let's read the language of the Aruch HaShulchan in the same Siman in Shulchan Aruch HaShem Mishpat Reish Lamed Zayin, but here it's in Sif Beis. And he says, "Ima achra yeshogig shlo yoda sharisha mahapi pedover zeliknos savekana, eino rasha." Okay, so there's no such deal as a rasha b'shogig here. He's either rasha b'mezid or he's not a rasha at all. However, says the Aruch HaShulchan, "Umidas chasidus la nichol ifnei arishon gam b'chi hay gavna." Since in effect there was an Ani Amahapik situation, therefore he should allow the Sheni as a Midas Chasidus to facilitate the first buyer's purchase of the property. And we saw already that Rav Moshe Nigris Moshe took a very harsh stand, and he said that Shogeg Kemezid. He writes, "Hine b'shulchan aruch hoshim mishpat siman reish lamed zayin lo huzkar chiluk bein yoda sheni sharishon mechazer achar adover l'knoso o l'asker atzmo o lo yoda sheni distama nemer hadin." The shulchan aruch doesn't make any qualifications here about oni yamahapich harora, whether or not the sheni was aware of the rishon. Mashma di af below yoda yeshlov chiyuv. So now he's going to be considered Rasha when he finds out about the Rishon. He gets that angry call from Lokeach Rishon. And if he's not willing to return it, then at this point he becomes a Rasha. That's the way Rav Moshe sees it. And there is such a thing as Ani Amahapik Harora Bishogeg. So again, according to the Aruch HaShulchan, the Sheni can only be called a Rasha B'mezit. Otherwise, he's not a Rasha. According to Rav Moshe Feinstein, what the halach of Oni Amahapik Charor is that we view it as if ki'ilu there was a clinching kinyan on the part of the Rishon, and the Sheni therefore, although inadvertently, had violated Gzela. Again, it's not a real Gzela, but it's a Gzela based on the category of Oni Amahapik Charor. So again, if we rely on the Aruch HaShulchan, then we could be makil that someone who is a shogeg and he transgressed the rules of unfair competition inadvertently, he certainly does not have to give up the purchase. He can adopt a midas chasidus, a very pious practice doing so, but that again might depend upon the losses involved and many other different variables and personal considerations. But according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, he has a great chumrah that even though he was a shogeg, the halacha of Ani Amahapik B'Charora nevertheless applies. So we ran out of time and we'll stop here. There's plenty more to come, but that'll be, say, part one. If Yemirtz Hashem, we'll have the ability to do part two in the future. Yemirtz Hashem.